Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Four Center podcast feed. I'm Kat Napsok.
I'm Joseph Scrimshaw.
And I'm Jennifer Landa.
And we are here, all three of us together in this busy holiday season to talk about breaking news from a long time ago. Some days it's crazy busy weeks. Bob Iger's walking around Disneyland plus pressing the flesh at other times.
Disturbing image.
Other times it's smaller news. We're going to get to it. All today. And before we do that, we're going to remind you that today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/4center. Over 180,000 titles and growing to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. As always, a little bit later, we have our 4center recommends an audiobook we think you should try out on us. And yes, I loved watching Iger on Instagram photos and stories just walking around Disneyland in a casual top. Just shaking hands and taking photos. Fascinated by it all there.
I hope he's asking each individual person, is this too expensive? Are your children no longer going to college? Is that what's happening now?
Do you like the turkey leg? Is it too much? Is it too little? Too little indeed. Before we get to the news, we always like to catch up, but also we're going to start off here strong here. This has been going really, really well. We appreciate your support. We're asking people, hey, would you consider going over to YouTube and subscribe to the Four Center YouTube channel if you haven't already? We are asking nicely, but humbly, we want some help to grow, and we got some cool things coming, and we are trying to get to 7,000 subscribers. We went for 6,500, and Joseph, We blew past that. I think we're going to do, we're going to do this. I believe.
It worked really well to start with a reasonable ask. And now we're shooting for the stars of 7,000.
Yeah, we got some cool things planned, like we keep teasing, but some YouTube only stuff. And we'll continue to rebroadcast the podcast and the live Q&As over there as well. Before we get into news, we always like to catch up. Busy time, busy season. Jen, we'll start with you, Star Wars and Life Adventures.
Yeah, I realized last week we didn't talk about our Star Wars adventures when I recorded with you guys. So I'll use one from a week and a half ago. I took my kids to Golden Apple Comics. Yeah, it was really fun. I wanted to get my daughter, you know, more motivated to be reading more. And I was like, ooh, I have some ideas about some comics you might like. I just thought the experience would be really fun for her. So we took the whole family there. They were having a sale. And it's nice because you walk right in and the kids section is right there. And there were so many to choose from. A lot of Star Wars stuff in the kids section. In fact, I found what I was looking for, which was Tales from the Rancor Pit. I still have to crack that open, but I'm excited to read that. And she picked up Amethyst of Gem World and Seed of the Space Girl and some sweet, there's like a Sweet Valley High one comic. My daughter, my three-year-old, got a Minnie Mouse comic book, which she's obsessed with. It was just a wonderful experience, and they saw R2 on top of it, so it was great.
That is great. I have been meaning to go to that comic book shop for 8 years, so I'll get there soon.
Super friendly. You know, I remember back in the day where it was not so friendly as a young woman, and I took my kids there, and everyone was so helpful. What do you need? Everything going okay? And it was such a welcoming place. It made me feel so hopeful.
Yeah, oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's absolutely. We keep talking about that here. The word nerd and the words nerd and geek meant something different. And then, a young lady walking into a comic shop was a different experience than it was now. Hopefully it's not perfect.
Right.
That's great. That's great.
It's fun.
Passing down the Star Wars love to the generation behind you. Joseph, have you been busy passing down Star Wars love? Is that what you've been doing?
No, I don't. If I've passed Star Wars love, it has been accidentally. Like a virus? I don't think so. I don't know. I don't like where this is going, so I'm going to back out. Beep, beep, beep. Backing up noise. No, things have been good. It's been a busy couple weeks. Yeah, we didn't catch up on Life in Star Wars Adventures last week because we did our breakdown of the first season of Andor, which was great. Mm-hmm. I have been extremely busy with holiday stuff and a couple different short film things. There's one that I'm trying to edit that I shot on my phone. Another one that's like Peace Fight, like the one I did with Ken and Mark. I'm trying to find time to edit that. But I'm also working with some mutual friends of ours, Ken, on a short film that is not going to go up on YouTube right away because I'm going to submit it to film festivals. Hey. And I'm kind of doing everything. The phone films are like a fun sort of like, I'm just going to see what I can do myself with pals in my living room, maybe in hotel rooms. But this one I'm doing like everything exactly the right way with the permits and insurance and SAG. And boy, I'm filling out lots and lots of paperwork. But I'm very excited for it. It's coming up. We're doing the shoot on December 18th. So that's taking up a ton of my my energy and headspace. Mm. And then the Star Wars adventure that is helping me, and I'm trying not to get too distracted, is my Rebels rewatch, which I've mentioned a couple of times. And I kind of kept setting it aside of like, at some point, Force Center will do a deep review of Rebels. And we would love to, but time is such a challenge right now. And I just decided like, hey, I sit down and I eat my English muffins and drink my coffee every morning. I'm just going to sit at my computer. I'm going to watch one, sometimes two episodes of Rebels. And I have been enjoying it so much. It's such a huge reminder to me as a Star Wars fan it's one thing to experience something as it's coming out, waiting week to week, going through all of the Star Wars discourse, which is often so fun, but it can also sometimes be challenging. My viewing of Rebels started off a little rocky because I had just fallen in love with the Clone Wars and I was a little resentful of Rebels. And it's so fun to go back and see it and fully appreciate it. I'm right at the beginning of season 3. So Tom Baker, the Fourth Doctor, is the Bendu, is just Just unspeakably great to me. I'm loving it so much. Everything that's Ezra's journey is like the antithesis to Luthen's speech, which is really fun to think about. It was amazing to watch the first season, and the first season is just chock full of like, it's okay. Star Wars is back. Here's all the themes, you know, here's original trilogy characters. Yeah. It's so funny to think of how annoyed people would be by the first season of Rebels if it was broadcast right now. So there's all these different ways to see it fresh, watching it again and being able to not have to wait a week, but just, you know, hit play right away on the next one. So enjoying it so very much.
I love that. I think that might be on my list next to pick up against. I got through season two on a rewatch, and then you and I started the Clone Wars report. And I was like, well, I just don't have, this has to go. I have to watch Clone Wars again now, which is fun. And you and I are coming down the end of that road. I'm going to be rewatching season seven. So I might pick it up. I just did a very long 15 season rewatch of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, which is a different podcast entirely. But that's my treadmill show, you know? And Rebels was that. So I think Rebels is up next. And it just completed Andor. And for me, that my Star Wars adventures last week have been pretty almost null and void. I had one of those weeks which it's kind of refreshing. And I think that's every once in a while, one of us three will have that where it's like, you know what? I didn't have a lot of Star Wars last week and Star Wars wasn't in my life. And you know what? That's okay. Cause you take a breath and then you dive back into the pool. But it is, Andor is a show that inspires conversations, which is one of the things I love so much. So, we had the Mark Ellis comedy special taping this weekend. Got to see, Joseph's smiling face there on that as well. And fun experience and, you know, stressful, but also fun and rewarding. But during the time, a lot of people, hey, I haven't seen you a bit. I've been meaning to ask you about Andor. Like, and that's always an interesting conversation to start, but it's generally so positive, but just kind of leads to wonderful conversations about Star Wars out there. But other than that, I kind of took a break from Star Wars, and that's okay. That's okay.
Absolutely. You got to leave room for some other things, and then Star Wars will be enriched by you taking a break.
Yeah, it will indeed. But just talking about Rebels and how it connects to Andor and the, you know, you would experience that, Joseph, rewatching season one. So it's been fun to, when people ask me about Andor, to just highlight the themes that are present everywhere, and let's talk about it. It's a lot of fun. All right, we're going to dive into some Star Wars news here. If I can get my notes up. Oh, iPad has too many codes to get in. There we go. All right. Headline of the day begins with Mando Returns. The Mandalorian Season 3 premiere date has been announced. This year's Comic-Con experience in Brazil was the source of many exciting trailers, which makes me think maybe that's why I took a week off from Star Wars. I was an Indiana Jones fan for a week. We could talk about that on Indiana Jones Center. The Comic-Con in Brazil, many exciting trailers and news drops, including the announcement that the third season of The Mandalorian will be dropping on March 1st. There had been some, is it February, January? Yeah, they moved it. We didn't know, but now we know. So just simply, hey, what are our thoughts on this release date, Jennifer?
I am glad it's in March because I thought it was going to be in February. That's what I thought. Or like you said, January. I didn't know. I need time to recoup from the holidays, from Andor. There's still so much that I want to explore with Andor. I want to rewatch it. And obviously Bad Batch is going to be coming up. So yeah. I want to be able to enjoy that. It will be interesting about them overlapping because I do think Bad Batch has a good size audience, but Mando is going to reach a much larger audience for sure. And it could put a damper on Bad Batch's finale, or it could just be like, you know, that corner of the Star Wars fandom that just appreciates it, enjoys it, and is able to juggle multiple Star Wars things. Yes. And also, The Mandalorian will be going on when Star Wars Celebration happens in April of this year. So there's a lot of Star Wars overlapping.
Yeah. Oh, that's that. Yeah, I forgot about that.
Me too.
The sub question is Bad Batch possibly overlapping. We got Bad Batch starting soon. And that sends us into questions about is animation lower on the tier? And you know what? I think the reality is it is. And that's not a slight against animation. It's just kind of what's always been. And we're here to support all of them equally. But Joseph, I'll look at you there. The release date, Bad Batch. And yes, oh no, we got to concern ourselves with traveling to London and covering Mando.
Yeah. No, I'm thrilled about the return of Mandalorian, of the show, of Mando and Grogu, the clan of two. I'm really, really excited for them to be coming back. There's so many floaty dates that shift with streaming. I'm always happy when there's just an official solid announcement. I had the fact that the Brazil Comic-Con experience was going to be a place where much news was dropped, including that exciting Indiana Jones news, was something I was not aware of. So now we can all put that on our calendars of when is the Comic-Con experience in Brazil. So we know big news. But yeah, I feel like for Mandalorian, it feels like it has been quite a while. It's been, about a year out from their appearance in Book of Boba Fett. It's been over 2 years. It will have been over 2 years since season two of The Mandalorian. So I think it's about time.
Yeah.
Very, very excited for them returning. I know they've announced Bad Batch for premiering on January 4th, 16 episodes with a 2-episode premiere, which would say, yes, there's a lot of possible airing 2 Star Wars episodes, both available at midnight on the West Coast. I really hope they shift Bad Batch. They've done it before. Not even its premiere date, but just shift it to Friday once Mando starts. Is my personal preference. I think in the big picture, I'm happy to have as much Star Wars as I can get. But for covering them, I do think it might be different if you're a fan. It may be a minor inconvenience, but certainly for those of us who cover it, I just really want to give it its own coverage, and really give it the respect in the time that it deserves. And I think even if I didn't have a Star Wars podcast, if I was just a not just a fan, that sounds really dismissive, and I did not mean it that way. If I didn't have the extra work to cover it, I would still want the time myself personally to absorb each one. Like even with the MCU overlaps, Miss Marvel and Kenobi being at the same time, like normally I would have made Miss Marvel like a priority. My wife and I would have watched it that night, and it had to wait weeks because Kenobi took up time and emotional space. So I really hope they shift Bad Batch.
Yeah, no, these are on the surface, of course, easy problems to have in our lives, but it's not just about even the podcast side, but the business side, because this does factor in. We will get those reports on numbers, and this thing didn't do as well, and this thing, and there's all these things to consider. So it definitely is part of the business conversation. I'm with you too on giving Bad Batch its due. As I said, yes, animation might come across as the second tier of Star Wars shows, only because I think it's just how it's still viewed, not just in Star Wars, right? But we still have executives going, we got to give the parents something when the cartoons are on. Like, that kind of vibe is still out there. So anything we can do to help change that, and Bad Batch is really a rich and wonderful show. So we'll see how that goes. I'm excited. As far as Mando coming back, March 1st, that date is closer than I want it to be in terms of life. I feel I'm getting excited for that. And Mando is a show that I've always really liked and loved parts of. But I think that 2-year absence, and yes, Book of Boba Fett's there, part of that continuation of that universe and that story. But with you, Joseph, I'm just excited to kind of go swashbuckling through the West in space again, I guess. I don't know.
Absolutely. The other thing about two Star Wars shows on the same day is, there's that question of what fans think. And I know when this has come up before, we've gotten, responses on social media where some people are like, I really don't like that. And other people would be like, I don't care. Give it to me on the same day. But I think it actually really matters from a business perspective, since we know so much of their analysis that we're doing right now is from these sort of engagement tracking systems that aren't even about views. They're about how much are they being talked about on social media. And I think having these two shows go up against each other is sort of unfair to the metrics of Bad Batch, because it's not going to get as much engagement on social media.
Yeah, it's playing behind the eight ball without a doubt. And we'll do our best to tweet it out and get those Bad Batch hashtags, hashtag gonky. Get them going. There's a lot of other information out there. It's kind of Mando news in the first part of our show today. A lot of it emerging from this Comic-Con experience in Brazil. Other just information that's out there now. WGA, which it's so been covering like the movie news quotations around that for about 10 years or so. And I don't ever remember where like the WGA released credits and that was a story. And it is a story, but like it's just changed that we're in this world of like, that's a source of information. And we've got this confirmed. This was just maybe more for me. Confirmed there will be 8 episodes. I had never doubted it was, but to see, okay, yeah, yeah, okay, you definitely got 8. They're not seeking 9 and they're not going to 7. Once again, this show is going to be written mainly by Jon Favreau with Noah Clore, who I think has been his writer's assistant working with them on some of the other shows, got some writing credits in Book of Boba Fett. He has a co-writing credit on episode 3. And Dave Filoni will be the co-writer in episodes 4 and 7, or is currently credited. So this is not a surprise. This show is not a typical writer's room type of show. You see that word thrown out a lot. There's some conversation around the show and the writing credits. So we want to talk a little bit about it. But Jen, start with you, Thart, on the writing credits. But we will point out that all of the directors have not been fully revealed or confirmed. Carl Weathers, Bryce Dallas Howard, I think they're back, and Filoni, but it's like we don't have that list yet. So we're just concentrating on the writers, but the directors do matter in this show. Right, Jen?
Absolutely. I mean, I think when I think about the writers, I think this is the writer's room. It's kind of become a buzzword. Mainly, it seems like after Andor, because people were like, that's why it worked so well, is because you had so many different writers. Well, yeah, because there were a lot more episodes, first of all. It's a different style of show. With Mandalorian, you know, I think that it works well with just having a smaller, quote-unquote, writer's room, a smaller group of people working on this. They have a vision, and the directors come in, and then they collaborate with those directors, and the directors are kind of like the, I don't want to say the star, but like they definitely like shepherd it in a way that feels a little bit more like they put their stamp on it, as opposed to Andor, it was just more about the execution of the material on the page. I'm guessing with Dave Filoni being on episodes 4 and 7, it could have like an Ahsoka storyline that could tie in with the Ahsoka series, kind of like what we saw with the Book of Boba Fett with the Mando episodes. I think that could work really nice. Get some hype around Ahsoka. And, you know, Noah Clore helped write the Mando episode in the Book of Boba Fett, which was a phenomenal episode that everyone loved. So I think that that's exciting. I'm excited. I don't have a problem with this small group of people, you know, taking on the show. I think people forget it is really good. It's why those Mando episodes really stood out in the Book of Boba Fett. It's like, oh, that's right. I love these characters. I love this storyline. There's so much to mine with Mando. And so I don't know. I think once the show gets going, people are going to start getting excited again and they'll forget about this writer's room talk.
Yeah. Yeah. And look, we want to be clear when we're discussing it. A lot of times you're seeing it brought up online of just, hey, wanting to get more voices in there. And that is not a bad thing. That is not something we are against at all here. So I want to be clear, but like to echo what Jen's saying, I do believe this term writer's room, it gets talked about online by people who are writers. So they very much understand the term and the word and what that actually is. But it just kind of seeps on out where even the term showrunner, I always say I didn't grow up with that term. You had them, didn't really call them that. Right. So it became like celebrity showrunners is the thing, you know, Joseph and I had lunch recently at Smokehouse and Mike Flanagan was there. We were like, it's a celebrity showrunner. He's there. So I don't want to diminish, any conversations around calling for more voices, but the voices are also the directors, which are very much part of this show and scoping every episode. This is just John's story with Filoni's helping, and you know, I would love to see some other people take a crack, I guess, but I'm not surprised and not expecting that, and it has worked so well. So I get it, but this isn't 13 writers in a room plotting out sitcom beats here.
Exactly.
I guess I'll be the more direct jerk on that. I don't know.
Yeah, no, I really agree with what both of you are saying. To me, it's just also about not being an absolutist about it. I think there are different kinds of creative projects. I think there are creative projects that are, you know, primarily led by one creative voice, and then all of the other sort of creative decisions are wonderful. They're valid. They're impressive, but they're all sort of looking to this small team at kind of the top of the pyramid for the ideas. That's kind of the story of Star Wars we've all celebrated, right? Of like, Lucas has this vision, but he needs Ralph McQuarrie and Ben Burtt and John Williams and all of the actors, you know, and everyone, John Molo, the costume designer of the first Star Wars. He needs all these people to make it sing, but their creative stuff is all sort of in service of trying to help George capture this elusive thing that's in his mind, right?
Yeah.
So I think you have those kind of projects, and then you have a little bit more standard writer's room projects. And I think writer's rooms in general, in my experience for the few that I've been in, but also talking to many other people who are actively writers and showrunners, mm-hmm. you know, friends of mine in Hollywood, a lot of times writer's rooms are still led by one person who makes mm-hmm. that decision, period, yep. right? Mm-hmm. I think the benefit of a writer's room is, let's say Mandalorian was a writer's room and Favreau was the showrunner. The big creative swings are still going to be his. What is helped by writer's rooms, and I think what people are concerned by, is sometimes within the room, somebody can go, hey, showrunner, mm-hmm. even though I know you want to take this creative swing, I think that maybe you don't understand from your perspective that that might be interpreted these ways, or it's reinforcing this trope. Mm-hmm. And then it's up to the showrunner to go, oh, hey, thanks.
Yeah,
I won't
yeah.
do that. But I think we're still seeing plenty of examples where people are bringing those things up in writer's rooms and the showrunner is still going, cool, I still want to do my thing.
That's yeah. exactly what I want to say. There's still that hierarchy. You're still, you know, there's still those power levels where they can voice it all they want. But at the end of the day, like you're saying, the top person has the ultimate say.
And I think that's what's different, you know, not to spiral into a different conversation, but I just want to throw this out here because the name is, you know, now tied to Star Wars. I think that's what's maybe different about what's going on with Damon Lindelof. Like when he took on The Watchmen and wanted to make it a story about the original graphic novel, dealt with many things about the nature of America and storytelling, but it didn't deal with race a lot. And he wanted this to be about, let's add that component to the story of Watchmen. So I think he did actually, you know, truly be, I'm facilitating this, but I'm really listening to the voices because I know they must be in this room for this yeah. story to be told. Mm-hmm. I think that's an example of a writer's room that is evolving a little bit from showrunner being leader decider to showrunner being facilitator. I'm going to make sure that this yeah. is I'm going to guide this through the process, but I'm really going to let other creative voices in on the actual decisions. Mm-hmm. So I think there's a lot of wiggle room in what writer's room means, what it brings. Mm-hmm. I think I'll wrap this up. I apologize. I think this has Mandalorian has always been a show where Favreau is the main voice. Filoni is there with him. Mm-hmm. It is a very distinct style because of that, because it has that distinct creative direction. And I'm fine with having that distinctive style, especially since there's going to be more flavors at the Star Wars buffet, like we're seeing with Andor. Mm-hmm. Every once in a while, I do think there are maybe some cultural issues that pop up that we've all discussed many times mm-hmm. in Favreau's work that might benefit from a more diverse group, but I also don't want to throw all the directors under the bus. The directors are there. The cast is there. And, you know, I really don't think that we should forget this really big announcement at Star Wars Celebration that Rick Famuyiwa is an executive producer mm-hmm. on season 3. And I think that is much like with Robert Rodriguez in Book of Boba Fett saying, we want you to be here making these big decisions with us all the time.
Yep.
So I'm really excited because I think Rick Famuyiwa's episodes are phenomenal. I think his other films are phenomenal. I'm really interested to see what his voice is going to bring. And I don't think we should forget that announcement in this discussion.
No, absolutely. Well said. And look, it's another buzzword out there is nuanced, right? But this is the sometimes get into a nuanced conversation. But even the Book of Boba Fett stuff, which I do think took some missteps. But then you listen to, you know, Tim Morrison talk about it. And I think he had a lot to say about what was going on in there, too. And a lot of it was his story. And it's like, that's just kind of complicated where we're at. But yeah, I second you on all that. Writer's room doesn't necessarily fix it. But I think the spirit of what people might be saying with that is what we're acknowledging is, yeah, that's something we're behind and understand. Mm-hmm. But that there are, you know, other voices in that process over a Mandalorian, including, like you said, Rick Famuyiwa, such a fan of his episodes in the Mando, right? They're just some of the best things. Mm-hmm. And he'll have his fingers there. Bryce Dallas Howard coming back. It's a truly collaborative process over there. And you get the sense that Favreau he likes that team of directors around him. Just look at those first behind the scenes episodes. He's got his team he brought in, and I think he enjoys that. So it's all there. But again, we also want to acknowledge there's some bigger conversations, bigger things going on. But we also really like what the show's done so far. So we'll live in all the worlds right now and try to acknowledge all of the voices out there if we can. Additionally, there was a lot of talk about surprises and keeping secrets at Comic-Con Experience Brazil. Pedro Pascal was there. Favreau and Filoni zoomed in, understandably, both busy. And they were all talking about kind of the same thing. Grogu season one, Luke Skywalker season two. They were kept secret, all those previous season reveals there. And more are on the way. There's a story about it. But again, we don't know. There's not like they're saying, you know, Crix Madine shows up. It's not like that. there's not one big surprise in regards to a character or setting. They all talked about the scope of this season being the biggest yet, which makes sense as the show grows and grows and grows. Epic, said Pedro Pascal live on stage there. So what do we think about the show getting bigger in scale? And what do you think that means in terms of surprises? Maybe it is a character. Maybe it is Han. We've got some great example of the aging of Harrison Ford out there right now. What is it? Any wild thoughts? Any thoughts on what the show is, Jen?
Yeah, I'm excited. I don't know if it was intentional or not, but I think it's good that Favreau said that, you know, this is going to be the scope of the show is going to be big, right? There's going to be a lot happening, a lot of surprises, because one of the reasons that some people pitted Andor against The Mandalorian or The Mandoverse is because they're saying, you know, Andor felt bigger in scale because they had a giant set built for Ferrix and they shot on location, and Favreau's coming out saying, don't worry, guys. It's going to be fun. I promise. This show is going to be great. And I believe him because, like I said, you know, that Mando episode in the Book of Boba Fett, whew, that was fantastic. It reminded me of how epic it is. I just want to say one last thing. Also, like the directors play an important part in the Mandoverse. That's how we got Deborah Chow to be able to then become the director and the showrunner for Obi-Wan Kenobi. So I think that they take that they're really trying to diversify. Maybe they could, you know, work on it in the writing area, but certainly like behind the scenes, executive producing and also directing, I think it's an important piece. Anyways, that's that.
No, I agree. And just to go back to that conversation for just a second, I do think Favreau is clearly like, this is project has always been like, yeah, I got this idea. Oh, Filoni does too. Okay, we'll work together. But everything we've seen Favreau say is really about empowering people, right?
Yes.
He wants to have other people play in his sandbox. He's clearly the kind of creator who maybe every once in a while he's like, no, I'm real rock solid on this. But he's listening to other people's opinions. That's clear just from the behind the scenes. That's clear from the way he talks. I don't want to, you know, throw old Favreau under the bus. I think that he is really trying to be somebody who is interesting in bringing more people into this world.
Yeah. And mentoring.
Oh, yeah. Big on that. Big on that.
Yeah.
This is a, yeah. Sorry, Jen, if any final thoughts there on the epic scale?
No, I'm excited. I think that they also probably got some more money. So I think that's going to help as well. Right. So I have no doubt. I mean, that trailer was fantastic. So I'm excited. I think everyone's going to be excited once the show comes out.
Yeah. Once additional footage in a trailer or something comes out, there's that one already out there now, which is great. And it is epic. Joseph, it's got a bigger scale indeed.
Yeah, no, I mean, I feel like I didn't see them zooming in, but, you know, did Favreau literally do the money thing where you make an individual bill fly out of your hand? Like, yeah, I think that is a part of what they're talking about. I think just the literal amount of money, the scale of effects, the literal number of performers in Mandalorian armor. I feel like the trailer already did announce this, that it is going to be bigger in financial scope because they are telling a bigger story. Like I think that's clearly always been the plan. And the first season started out, you know, with the tight budget, but with a smaller scale of storytelling, and this is now exploding. And I think that's great because it's exploding in terms of the scope of what does it mean to be a Mandalorian? If that was Din's question from the get-go, I feel like a part of the first season is from Din's perspective, being a Mandalorian is being somebody who saves children, of being a savior, and he couldn't bear not being seen that way by Grogu. So that story has always been on the table of what it means to be a Mandalorian. Now we've got this story set up where next to Grogu, the thing that matters most to Din is being a Mandalorian. His leader has told him he's not, and he's got this this mission to find the living waters beneath the mines of Mandalore. He's heading towards this sort of mythic rebirth, which would be plenty, except for he's also got that darksaber, which symbolizes leading all of Mandalore. So I feel like this great question that Din's always been wrestling with has been escalated of what does it mean to me to be a Mandalorian? And oh, now my personal journey to define that affects Grogu, and it affects the entire future of who the Mandalorians are going to be, where we're going to live, what we're going to believe in. Are we going to be a unified culture? Oh, is all that my responsibility too? So I feel like the literal scope of his journey has expanded. So it's great that the budget, the scale of storytelling that we can see is going to reflect that.
Yeah, I love everything you say in there, and just even some of the shots and going into Mandalore, all that kind of stuff that we're expected. I think I am most excited, though, for the little big question with Katee Sackhoff's Bo-Katan in there of representing the, you ain't nothing but a cult child. Let me tell you how it is, because I was there type of thing, and where were you? That is some big stuff. That is as epic for me as space battles, which they're saying we're going to have you know, bigger locations, the locations we might know, new locations to learn. I want to, more than anything, hear that conversation between them. We've seen some teases in the trailer, her on that throne, kind of the, where were you? That is emotionally epic. And going back to Mando chapter one, chapter two, the Familia episode chapter two is still one of my favorites because it starts asking those questions. The IG-11 rebuilding scene is still the core of the show, and reprogramming yourself, rebuilding, moving forward, breaking cycles, all those big themes we talk about. I think it's going to be big in that scale as well. So if the stagecraft can match it, even better. Even better. Any specific wild surprises, Joseph? Do you want to go ahead and say the Nine Numb showing up, or what do you think?
Yeah, no, I think that we should, this is one of those examples where the headline should really be taken with the actual text. Because they say this specific quote, not everything is going to be a big surprise like that, referencing Grogu and Luke Skywalker, but each week it should be something unexpected happening. So I think the surprises they're talking about are not necessarily, you know, here's a new character, you know, here's a legacy character, you know, the thing that some fans are going to criticize is the cameo of the week that some fans don't like, but more the emotional surprises. That said, I kind of tried to go through like, who is alive in this era? Who makes sense? If Mandalore's trying to figure out what it's going to be, my mind really goes to New Republic, right? They've already had the presence of the New Republic be a big thing. But if Mandalore is returning to power in any way, shape, or form, not the planet, but the people, if they're unifying, becoming part of the galaxy again, the first question is, are they going to be a part of the New Republic? You know? Yeah. And so, I mean, the big surprises that I can think of, Shriv? Singer Rath Velis from the Aftermath novels, members of Alphabet Squadron. I suppose they could go for CGI Leia. I kind of don't know about that.
Yeah.
So my mind goes to New Republic. And then, you know, there are other things like, could there be a Satine flashback where we see Satine in live action?
Could
a surviving Jedi like Quinlan Voss show up? But these are all like Cobb Vanth kind of for all in paying attention to Star Wars of all media kind of things. They're not like de-aged Han Solo, which I don't think who knows.
I gotta say to the, like, the Leia question, even the Han question, like, look, if they do a Han and Chewie showing up, I bet you I'd be excited. I'm going to go ahead and I'd be excited. I'm with you. It's not that I don't want to say I don't want that. That's a dangerous thing to say, but I just don't get the sense that that's what they're thinking about. And in terms of surprises, the situations, planets, Coruscant, any kind of big planet like that, that's kind of the thing I want too. But I love what you're saying too. Of like Cobb Vanth is still a great example of just like, it's a small side character, but with a big thing, the Boba Fett armor. So that kind of makes sense. But, you know, a lot of those characters, the Nora Wexley, you know, who, young Tamman Wexley, I don't know, something like Wedge, you know, I can recast to a younger Wedge. There's a lot of things like that could work because of the timeline. I'm intrigued by that. Hey, look, not for nothing. Give me Genevieve O'Reilly's Mon Mothman episode. Have the goat show up. That's something that people think, especially with Filoni around going, hey, look, here's what we got going on in Ahsoka. So well, there'll be some synergy, some storyline synergy, I think, for sure.
I think I know it will have the debate about other characters showing up, but for me, I think, you know, Favreau and Filoni have been clear that this was always their plan with Mandalorian, to start small and to have this guy who kind of doesn't understand or know the big galaxy, kind of fall into it, find himself in it, get caught up in all of these big stake conflicts. And I think that they've been really great about every character who shows up is there to serve Mando and Grogu's story. And I think that will continue. If it's a small character from a video game or if it's Leia Organa, I think they'll be there to serve Din and Grogu's story.
I think we agree with that as well. All right, we are going to take a quick break. But before we do, have our Force Center recommends an audiobook we think you should try out on us. Joseph, this one's on my bookshelf right now. I've got a bookmark in it. I've been reading it. What's our choice?
The dust jacket's off. I'm going to read it this week. We are still recommending Padawan by Kirsten White. We've made lots of jokes about how often we've been recommending this one. We've just fallen behind. We really want to read it. We're really excited to read it. So we hope if you're listening and you want to read it, that you've read it or you're going to listen to this audiobook.
Yeah, absolutely. To do so, download your free audiobook today by going to audibletrial.com/ForceCenter. Again, that's audibletrial.com/ForceCenter for your free audiobook. All right, quick break. On the other side, we got some Acolyte news. That's right. There's another show on the way that people are looking forward to, us included. Stick around for more news here on ForceCenter.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Welcome back to Force Center. We are taking a look at the Star Wars news of the week, and we talked about Mando coming back March 1st. That's exciting. Well, a little bit later in our lives, we're going to be enjoying the debut of Leslie Headland's series. Speaking of showrunners and running rooms and all that good stuff, we got her series, The Acolyte. A little bit of news dropped and we wanted to talk about it. First, there's another member to the ever-growing cast, a lot of cool names. Deadline reporting the addition of Margarita LaViva. That's how I'm saying it, even though she's, Jen, and you and I were talking before, she's got a Russian heritage, right? So yes. I should know how to say that is, you know, Ukrainian Circassian being in my blood. I should be able to say it a little better than that. But yes, she's this is a smaller in scale casting addition. This is a guest starring role. She's appeared in shows like The Deuce, Revenge, How to Make It in America, a full resume out there as well. So thoughts on the growing cast of this show first, Jen?
This was a move by her new reps at Paradigm to get her some buzz, because that was how the announcement was led, right? That she's now joined, now rep by Paradigm in all areas. Oh, and by the way, she's also guest starring on this new Star Wars show, which is wonderful. I feel like maybe I've seen her before. She was in Adventureland. I saw that, but I don't remember her. But she has worked a lot. So, and I checked out her Instagram, and she has kind of a really fun energy, but she can definitely go into serious drama. So that's exciting. You know, The Acolyte seems like it has a big cast. So I'm kind of thinking that we're going to get more of these announcements, these guest star announcements from agents and managers, trying to get some publicity for their clients, which is wonderful. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it makes me think, well, they might have one episode, you know, they may have like a couple scenes, which is fine. But I don't want to get too excited with any of these announcements. I'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, no, it's a good look. It's this is often, again, even talk about that term writer's room, a term guest star is a specific term in Hollywood there. So it's exciting. And I love, Jen, you're so right. It was that, like, that was the lead, her new agency. And then now this. But hey, we're talking about it. So guess what? No wonder they're doing it, because it works. And this is an actor to celebrate, Joseph, in this show.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I'm very excited to just keep the announcements coming about The Acolyte. I'm not super familiar with this actor, so there's not a huge amount of fireworks going off for me just because I don't know her work. I really agree with you, Jennifer, about the announcements, and I like that this is how Star Wars is finding its way into our lives. It's the agent manager wars are getting us to see and appreciate some Star Wars news.
Right.
I was going through her entire list, and I was like, I've never seen her. Like, wait, I have seen this actor in the dumbest possible way. I have seen her in the television show The Deuce, but only with it muted, because I realized The Deuce used to come on after Game of Thrones, and I would mute the television while my wife and I talked about Game of Thrones, and The Deuce would be playing in the background, muted. So I have nothing valuable to say about this performer other than I'm sure she's great.
That's amazing. That's amazing. That's like, I've seen a lot of shows that Grace has watched. I've heard them, not seen them, because I'm on the couch playing video games with her playing. That's great. Yeah, no, it's exciting. And you're right, Jen, too. Like, more of these announcements probably coming. This seems like a big cast, a lot of cool people being brought into Star Wars. And keeping with what Leslie Headland had said a long time ago, I'm going to send the elevator back down and bring up a lot of cool people to this thing, including Daphne Keen. So there's the story. This is she was speaking with Tech Radar. The Acolyte cast member recently announced, Daphne Keen, said The Acolyte is set 100 years before the prequel movies. This we knew, and it's kind of an explanation of how the Sith infiltrated the Jedi. It's a Sith-led story, which has never been done before. So we got the description of the show recently about two Jedi, former apprentice, coming back to investigate some stuff going on, and dark side powers emerging. That's been attached to the show since the beginning. I want to be clear here in my notes, and we're going to be clear for Center. We are not here to doubt Daphne Keen as if she doesn't understand the use of the term Sith. She has said that. She said Sith twice in that sentence there. Mm-hmm. But we do want to, we've been talking about here is there's obviously the difference between Sith and dark side user, dark side powers emerging, and the Sith with their old rule of two plan and occasional apprentices on the side, and set 100 years before the Phantom Menace, that could lock you into some certain Sith masters in canon, which Leslie Headland has said, I'm a big EU fan. I'm a big Star Wars fan. So all of this could sync up. I just think it's an interesting conversation to keep having about this idea of the show playing around with the dark side versus the Sith. Daphne Keen, again, I want to reiterate, not saying she doesn't understand the term. She probably understands it more than me right now, because she's shooting this show. I'm just saying, it was to see that so specifically used, that it's a Sith-led story. We want to talk about it there, so we could take that at face value. Do we want the Sith we're familiar with to show up? Or do we want new faces and new masks and new Darths showing up in this story? It's a fun conversation to continue, Joseph. And what are your thoughts on Sith-led stories?
Yeah, no, I think the Sith in some way are clearly involved. I think I do have the bias that, you know, it's not an actor's responsibility to do the press for a show, right? And I think in complicated genre worlds where fans really are laser focused on things like what's the difference between Sith and a Darksider, and even with a comment which was never done before, and I've seen people like, has she not read Lords of the Sith?
Right.
You know, so I do think it is always it's good not to doubt actors, but I think it's also very good to give them some empathy and some grace that it is not their responsibility to be the press and to parse you know, jargon of genre for hyper accuracy. So I think the Sith are going to be involved. I'm not going to run with this and go confirmed. You know, Amanda Stenberg's character is the Padawan and she's the Sith. You know, I will stop short of that. I do think it is making me think more about, ooh, what's the plot? If the Sith are involved, you know, is it that the active Sith at the time are trying to spread confusion and in corruption. Are they trying to get at a former Padawan, right? Not even as a part of like the master plan, but just like, how can we walk through the Garden of the Jedi and rot every flower, rot every plant. So I think one of the most intriguing things about that press, description we got is that it's a former Padawan retreating with her master. So whatever happened, whether the Padawan is not, you know, officially with the Order anymore, is the story that some Sith are trying to get to this Padawan and turn her, and she is, you know, somewhere in between, right? So so like the maybe the title character isn't a Sith yet, but wants to be one. I think all those kind of ambiguities are possible. Yeah. I have some thoughts about what Sith may or may not show up, but I don't want to monologue, so I'm going to pause.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Oh, Jen, go ahead.
I want to know. I want to know. Who do you think?
I just want to say this because I do have some thoughts of that too, and I want to hear choices there. I find myself in a weird spot. I'm really excited by this. I'm really excited by a Sith-led story, or at least that term. I get protective. I don't want to say defensive. I get protective of maybe Star Wars itself, of like, I think there's a little bit of a Sith fan culture that pops up where it's like, finally, we get it's that old Sith point of view thing. And I just don't think that Leslie Headland does not strike me as a person that's about to be like, finally, I'm going to tell the story of these sympathetic dark side users. I think it's going to be something else going on, clearly. But I'm excited by this, excited by the timeline. I'm just glad we don't have. Well, it's definitely Darth Tenebris. You know, so don't have that. It could end up being that, but right now I'd like to explore not new Sith, but just what you're kind of talking about, Joseph, the walking through the garden and making everything dead. That is interesting, especially leading towards the Jedi Order and the Phantom Menace and all those things. So that's where I'll start there. But doesn't mean I don't have some thoughts on specific names or wants. And I guess, Joseph, we'll get your names here.
Yeah, no, I think there's just lots of wiggle room. I think sometimes as fans, we can focus on what we know and then forget that there's a lot that we don't know to the side of it.
Yeah.
So at 100 years before the Phantom Menace, we definitely need to leave room for Sheev and Plagueis, who is established as, you know, Sheev's master. Mm-hmm. But at 100 years before, you know, I'd be fine with it if this is Plagueis's master. Of course, as you're talking about, Ken, in the Darth Plagueis novel, it was established that Plagueis' master was Darth Tenebris, a Bith Sith, which is just fun to say.
Right.
But Tenebris has only been mentioned in canon as one of the namesakes of Sith troopers in the sequel era. So there's nothing in modern canon that says Tenebris is for sure Plagueis' master.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So it could be Tenebris, right? Or it could be a different Sith, because we're not locked into that. It could be Tenebris if Leslie Headland is a big fan. But the other thing about it is we don't need to just focus on that like one idea, right? Maybe it is Tenebris, but he's in the background as a Sith master and he has a Sith apprentice other than Plagueis, because sometimes they go through a lot. So could it be that the Sith presence is something like an apprentice of Tenebris who is looking for their own acolyte to turn mm-hmm. against their master, right? Yeah. I think there's so much wiggle room in, even if it is something that's kind of locked into Legends canon of it's Tenebris, there's still lots of ways to make it a new and unfamiliar face that's the main Sith mm-hmm. we're interacting with.
Mm-hmm. I really like this idea. There's this kind of playing around with the wiggle room in what we do not know. And I'm excited to, like, you know, I love presidential history, and it's like you got your Garfields, you know, tragically, yeah, 30 days and all that kind of stuff. Like, who's the one before Palpatine that was like, I signed up for 2 weeks, it didn't work out, you know? There's some room there, and I would love some familiar names, even in passing, mentioning if that's where this show goes. It also seems there has a little bit of this, you know, thriller aspect too, where it could be something else. Maybe it's, even then you don't fully know who's behind some of it. We're so far out of this, Jen, though. We're just having fun speculating wildly and responsibly at the same time. Do you want a new Darth? What's your prediction?
Yeah. You know, I do think it's interesting that StarWars.com did not mention Sith in their official announcement. Mm-hmm. Why? And I think Daphne, I don't want to say she gave away anything, but I think that the reason why she used Sith twice is because she's, you know, working on that. Mm-hmm. So I think it is definitely, as my speculation irresponsibly, that it is definitely a major part of the story. Leslie, as you mentioned, Leslie Headland is a fan of the Old Republic game. She's also a fan of the EU. So I think she's going to draw inspiration from those properties to create and shape her story about the Sith. And I think that's going to get a lot of fans excited, because a lot of EU fans have felt kind of slighted. And so I think that it's a bit of a risk, right? Because the Sith have been so kind of mysterious, and it's been helpful to have them be so mysterious all these years. So once you start locking things in, it can be a little tricky with canon and things like that, and how it affects the Star Wars saga. But I think she's the right person to do it, because she is a really hardcore fan. And with something this tricky, you kind of need somebody who is going to be able to address those, you know, those things in the past and bring them and make them new, so that people who have no idea who the Sith are can get on board. And fans who are hardcore and who loved that will feel satisfied. That's a challenge.
Mm. It's a big challenge, too. And actually, it brings something up here. This is a debate that will go on and on and on. And it really just, depending on your point of view, is how you like or dislike the answers. If you got one side, we got Mr. Tony Gilroy. I'm not a fan. I'm not a Star Wars fan. I think he has Star Wars shirts in his closet, but he's over there. And then you got, like what you just said, Jen, someone who's like, yeah, trust me, I'm a fan. I know. I had Star Wars Insider and all that stuff. And I think both can work. Clearly, both can work. The movies are an example of that. All those kind of things. You know, John Kasdan, fan of Star Wars. That worked on his thing. So I like the Gilroy side. I get the arguments for more of that kind of stuff. But then on the other side, I for something like this, history that's undefined, but specific history with only one or two names at a time. It isn't like Gilroy coming in with a lot of the rebellion, where there's a giant amount of landscape to move into and build on in terms of the story of the rebellion and all the planets come together. Like that makes sense, but it's kind of hyper specific. If that makes sense, right, Joseph? They're just like, we got some names, we got some ideas. It doesn't just have to be the names. We can play around with it. But the Sith versus Jedi at this time, we want someone who's maybe like, I got this. This is my story. I'm pitching it. I know what I want to do.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think somebody who is a fan, or somebody like Gilroy, who is clearly listening, right? Like overturning. No, he's not just going through and saying, this didn't happen, that didn't happen. Like he's filling in gaps and maybe changing some preconceived notions, you know, but he's not overturning things. But I think for somebody who's really invested, they probably know, like, okay, yeah, of course, there's the rule of two, and the where Sheev starts to fit into it, that's really important, and we don't want to mess with that too much. But what are all the ambiguities of a giant galaxy like this that can be played with? You know, I think one of the great things about the Sith is, like, clearly there are tons of darksiders, and it is in the nature of the Sith to kind of be really selfish and manipulative about the title, right? Why isn't Asajj a Sith? you know, when she's fully using the dark side, because Dooku is holding that title back and is waiting until she's powerful enough to make his move against Palpatine, right? So there's plenty of wiggle room to have like a great new character who's running around calling themselves a Sith, you know, because they say they are, right? Or it could just be Sith cultists, right? A pocket of Sith cultists who got a hold of this Padawan and they're telling her this is what it takes to be a Sith, you know?
Oh, here we go.
We, the fans, have a specific relationship with what the actual title is, what the history is, you know, who's got the badge for officially being in the club. But I think a cool thing about the club is that it plays games with who gets the title.
Yeah, I love what you said. Yeah, jokes aside, maybe finally we get the Sith cultists from Exegol. We get their origin story, right? No, no, I'm excited about that. And this has always been pitched as a Sith led or not. It's been pitched as you got this good team, the Jedi Order, that's collapsing, that's kind of fallen in on itself, which is where we see it. It's ready. It's primed for the fall. By episode one, we're going to see that. And so it's not a glorification of the bad team, the Sith. It's just showing how the bad team infiltrates the good team. That's exciting in terms of themes, in terms of lessons and the Star Wars story. So without specifics, we'll see how it, you know, how it slides on into the whole story. I love that.
Can I ask a specific question real quick?
Yeah.
If there is, with all those ambiguities possible, if there is just a Sith, regardless of it, if it's, you know, an apprentice, whatever, but there's a Sith, a straight up Sith, what kind of, in the characters new, what kind of thing are we interested in seeing on screen for a new Sith? What do you think, Ken?
Yeah, see, my mind wants to go to a Palpatine type that is using other ways, politics, the system, getting in there. That's what I love about Palpatine's presence in a lot of ways. He's the ultimate evil, but how he got there was so mundane, right? But I would want that something different. So, fallen Jedi, questioning the system in a similar to Dooku, I guess, going that kind of way. But I'd like to see it someone, I think at the end of the day, for me, someone that has a public face and that the rule of two hiding out for 1,000 years doesn't mean they're in a, you know, like me playing Fortnite, hiding out in a building and hoping no one comes until it's time to strike, that they're actually out and about, that they're seeing the galaxy. They know how to get in there. They know who's weak. They know where the cracks are, and have a public secret face is something I think I'm excited. Whether it comes out, lays down, you know, too close to Palpatine, I don't know, but that's kind of where
Yeah.
I love that. Yeah, I would love to see. I mean, I don't know about specifics, but I know the feeling that I want to get. And one of the things I loved about Andor was that the villains, quote unquote, were quite, I wouldn't say likable, but they could be charismatic, right? Mm-hmm. I would love to see this villain in The Acolyte be charismatic, somebody who you may even least expect it, but just who is pure evil in little moments. To then the big reveal of who they really are. I mean, that's what was so great about Palpatine is how charming he was, how he seemed like he really cared, right? And you could see how everyone would be fooled. So I like that idea, like you're saying, Ken, of somebody who is like out and about, public facing, maybe even well-loved, because quite frankly, that's a lot more like our world. And that to me is a little bit more interesting in a villain, at least right now.
Yeah. I love that. I think that's such a truth of what the Sith do, especially when they are trying to seduce someone to the dark side, is they're really charming. You know, we got to see a little bit of it with Palpatine and Anakin in the actual prequel films. I love, Maul and Ezra meeting and Maul pretending to be an old person who's been also been victimized by the cruel Sith, which he has, but he's playing it in such a way that's so manipulative. So, yeah, love to have some quality time with a long manipulation. and then for what the actual Sith looks like, I think a woman would be great, since this is a woman-led show. I would love, not that there haven't been in canon, but you know, with all this talk of who's it going to be, you know, I would love a woman. An alien might be great. To switch it up a little bit. And I really agree with you, Ken, about the public face and the Sith face is such a fun, you know, thing to play with. I had forgotten Darth Tenebris, is given a real public facing alien name and is like a famous, well-known ship designer, you know?
Yeah.
So that idea, you know, we've been playing with it in Andor of like kind of the two faces. That's just fascinating. So I'd love that too.
Love it. And here's the thing. We are far out from the show still. Time moves so fast, but we're excited about this. And this is already to me a big victory for the show. Just putting some Star Wars thoughts in our head to break down. Wonder. That's great. Well, we'll keep you all updated on the guest starring roles, the leaks for management teams, and what Sith is showing up. New masks, new capes, new cowls on the way, possibly. That is our look at Star Wars news. Before we get out of here, it's kind of keeping in the theme here on the discussion. This week in Star Wars history, looking ahead to Star Wars Pass on December 6, 2004, Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic 2, The Sith Lords, was released by LucasArts and Obsidian Entertainment for the Xbox. Just like news, sometimes this week in Star Wars history has slow weeks, too. There was a lot of released in Brazil for the first time, movie stuff, but this one popped out to me. It's a smaller bit of Star Wars history, but the three of us have a different relationship with these games. So this is more of a conversation about Knights of the Republic overall. So what was our reaction to releases like this then? In December 2004, were we like, whoa, yeah, or I missed it? And how come we didn't dive in? Or have we played them? And I, Joseph, I remember you were trying to play it a little bit, if I remember, on the iPad. So how come they didn't grab us much, if that's the case? And would we play them now? Jen, I don't think I've heard your relationship with Knights of the Republic as much as I know mine or Joseph's.
Yeah. I did not.
That said it.
I did not play it. And here's why. I remember thinking it looked cool. And it still looks cool. If you watch the trailers for it now, I'm like, well, I might actually play this now. But I do have a problem playing games that are involve anything scary. I get a little too scared, to be perfectly honest. And anytime I don't want to be surrounded by all of that darkness. You know what I mean? Like I like being a rebel. I like the good guys, bad guys, that kind of stuff. This is a little bit too much of the bad guys. So I think that's why I didn't play it then and why I might hesitate playing it now. I mean, I get freaked out with the Legend of Zelda. My husband plays it at night and I hear that spooky music. It gets creepy. I don't like it. Then I have nightmares, you know? So I'm a bit of a fraidy cat. I'm sorry to say.
Look, I'm afraid to get too. There's some parts of Red Dead Redemption 2 or even Red Dead Redemption 1 where you kind of walk through an abandoned town.
Oh,
and
there's
a zombie mode. I didn't get that. I didn't get that downloadable content for the game because I would get scared. But even in some like ghostly ghost towns, which there's not a soul in there, I get scared. I'm riding my horse like, I got to get out of here. And it's 2 in the afternoon.
Exactly.
I get what you're looking at there. Joseph, you and I have talked about this before. I know you're playing, but I especially want to know of younger Joseph Scrimshaw, December 6, 2004. He sees this news and says what?
That was an interesting time for me. That was a time of life transition in 2004. So I was trying not to play video games anywhere near as much. Earlier in 2004, I had broken up with my girlfriend of 3 years. We had lived together, and one of her valid concerns was the amount I was disappearing from reality while playing video games and making them a big priority. So it was something I was trying to be aware of to find balance. I think I've told before that the original Knights of the Old Republic, I watched like a hawk, and I even got my my MacBook that had the right specs. I remember looking at the specs again and again. It's like, my MacBook needs to be able to run Knights of Old Republic. And then I just had that like, you can't be trusted with this. a video game on your computer as you're trying to kind of get back on the horse of life. So that's why I wouldn't have been, you know, it wouldn't have been a focus for me in December of 2004. I also didn't have an Xbox, and it's really funny to remember, you know, when I was playing video games a ton, all of my friends had had Nintendo.
Yeah,
had the GameCube, and we were sort of loyalists. And, you know, it's really funny to think about now. But by 2004, it was still a like, hey, you know, the jerks who make Microsoft Office, they're trying to shove their way into the video game market, which like, obviously they succeeded. No problem. You know,
that's amazing.
But I did not have an Xbox nor money to get it for that. In terms of the Knights of the Old Republic, you know, there's a part of me that wishes I really jumped on, you know, back in the day. I did start it on my iPad. I'm just so struggling with time. I have all these books staring at me that I want to read and, you know, shows I want to rewatch. I can't believe I haven't rewatched Obi-Wan Kenobi, but it's, it's time. And the only reason I set it like 2 days aside, you know, earlier this year, or maybe even last year, and started Knights of the Old Republic, I was really enjoying it. And I'm just struggling to make time for it.
Yeah. No, I think similar. Well, in terms of time frame, I mean, Revenge of the Sith was still on the way. I was still a Star Wars fan. None of that. I've always been. But, you know, there's those down times in the fandoms, or at least your own personal fandoms, or sometimes you're just like, I'll wait for episode three. I'm not going to play video games. And I was I'm still brand loyal to PlayStation. It's so, I didn't know why. I think it's just the one I got. I got the PS1 and that was it. I was like, I'm on this team. It's such a weird thing. So I didn't have the Xbox as well. I don't like playing games on the PC for a lot of reasons, but including what you're saying, Joseph, was like, I already have a problem with the video game console sitting and staring at me right now.
Right.
Where I'm like, how soon can I get off of Force Center to go play Fortnite again? Like, it's a problem right now. And I want to thank our buddy Ken Plume for getting me addicted to that again. So I have to watch that too. I have to mitigate my playing times here. But in terms of the game itself, I always feel bad. A lot of people are so excited. KOTOR, whatever you want to call it. Such a fandom for it. And our pal Kevin Smets, a lot of you know from the Schmodown, but he edited some of our videos on the YouTube channel, The In Memoriams. He's got his own like fan film version of some of the KOTOR stuff. Every time he brings up, he's got that new Star Wars podcast, the Scoundrels Inc. show he's doing that with Sully and Hannah and Frank Janish. And he'll bring it up, but there's always a part of him that his soul just kind of hangs in sadness when I'm like, I still haven't played it or I haven't watched it. And I don't know why. I'm excited. I think I read that first Darth Bane book, the Drew Karpyshyn one, and that was 2014. And then the new canon started and was like, well, I guess I have to not have to put down those books, but I have to start focusing on this stuff. Including for Jedi Alliance and then eventually Force Center. So I think I could have been more into it, but I got pulled away. And so I've just kind of waited for the official canon version of it as well. But it's a wonderful world, always respectful. But it's I saw this news story and I just was kind of laughing of like, I was alive and well during this time, had Star Wars things on my shelves, but this story just did not a blip on my radar in 2004. So
yeah.
And would I play it now? Maybe. It's right. It's a big world.
Yeah, the new problems and the old problems are the same. As we're getting news about, you know, Star Wars Jedi Survivor allegedly coming out in March, and I need to buy an entirely new console.
If I can find it. Yeah, the search for the PS5. I got very lucky, so we'll have to put the call out to Force Center friends to help get Joseph a link. It was the weirdest concept for me. That leaked news possible March for Jedi Survivor and Jedi Order Survivor, and I my head looked literally kind of hung down. I was like, I don't have the time.
Yeah,
I don't have the time, but I'm excited. So
yeah,
all right. Well, 20 years from now, we'll look back on. Jedi Order Survivor when it came out in Force Center there in the future. All right, we are almost out of here for today. We want to thank you all for hanging out, listening to us here. Before we go, let you know where you can find us on Twitter. It's Force Center Pod. We are on Hive Social at Force Center. Is Hive back up right now? I don't know. Facebook page is Force Center Podcast. We're on Instagram and YouTube as well. As we said up top, we'd really appreciate it if you want to come aboard the YouTube side. Subscribe, as we've got some YouTube-only content coming over there soon. And also got a lot of things up there for you to watch, including those In Memoriams. Go back and watch them with Kevin Smets. We put those together for Spotlight Star Wars, and I pulled them off of those and put them on the YouTube channel. They're out there as well. Fun things to work on with Kevin. Podcast is available on Acast, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and more. Merch available at tpublic.com/user/ForceCenter. Get your Speculate Responsibly t-shirt so you too can speculate responsibly about Sith Lords. Patreon.com/ForceCenter where you can support us and get to our Discord server. You can follow me at Kednapsock or go to Kednapsock.com for upcoming information. Holiday season, if you want to get a copy of Why We Love Star Wars signed by me, personalized with a sticker, I'll throw on some stickers. Go to my website and the shop section there. Jen, where can they find and follow you?
You can find me on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook at Jennifer Landa, YouTube at Jennifer Landa, where I have new videos every week, TikTok, where I post director's cuts at Jennifer Landa 1138. And Hive Social, according to their Twitter, they're not back, but they'll be back soon. So you can follow me when they're back up at Jennifer Landa on Hive.
That's interesting. Yeah. Hey, they're getting it right. Security concerns. You got to get it right. That's how the Sith get into the Jedi Order. Where can I find and follow you?
You can follow me on social media at Hive when it's back, and Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, all is at Joseph Scrimshaw, and you can check out my YouTube channel. You can just go to YouTube and search for Joseph Scrimshaw. I'm posting my not unboxing for Star Wars action figures and other action figures is YouTube Shorts, and I'm putting up more short films and comedy soon. Like I said, I'm working on a couple things that are going to pop up there, and if you are the Patreon type, you can also search for Joseph Scrimshaw on Patreon if you want to help me with those short films. That is it for me.
That is it for Joseph, for Jennifer, for everyone here. So for all the Sith, just kind of line away. We'll see you next time here on Force.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.